hearing the whole 6010.
Fantasy Focus Football is presented by Geico. Switch to Geico and see all the ways you could save. The pick is in, and the best podcast ever is about to take place.
Wow.
Day after the NFL draft, at least round one of the NFL draft.
Though? Well, Mike, are we sure it's going to be the best one? Because we were just talking before the show that we had maybe a little bit of a hard time sleeping last night.
Yeah,
a lot of adrenaline after the draft. I was up till 1:30 just scrolling through my phone because I couldn't fall asleep, so... I don't know about you guys, but I'm mostly here.
Yeah. I was watching press conferences in bed last night, trying to see more about these prospects on my
new
team.
So
yeah,
right.
Man, we were all up pretty late last
night. I want to talk about the Lions at some point. We're going to focus in on the players that are fantasy relevant, one of which is a Detroit Lion or a new Detroit Lion. But I do want to talk about the Lions at some point. Remind me to empty the clip on that tape, because I actually thought the Lions deserve less criticism than they seem to be receiving this morning. But round one of the draft is now over. There's still six more rounds to go. We're taping this Friday at 11:15 a.m. So something takes place prior to round two. We haven't accounted for it. That is the reason why. And I think it's particularly important to note that news could happen, because just before the draft yesterday, legit news did happen. Lamar Jackson signed a 5-year extension to stay with the Baltimore Ravens. So 5 years, including this year, puts him all the way through the 2027 season. And what does it mean for fantasy, Mike? Here's the other thing I would say, is that it eliminates the possibility of Lamar not being available for the Ravens because of a contract dispute during some point this season.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, check this out. Last season, his efficiency was poor, right? Career low in yards per pass attempt, right? You didn't have a great skill guys around him. Guys, he was still fifth in fantasy points per game
was
at
it 18.2,
quarterback.
Right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. He in that situation. And now he's gone from maybe his worst set of skill guys around him to maybe his best, right? You have a healthy J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards in the backfield. They bring in Odell Beckham Jr. You have year three now of Rashad Bateman. We're going to get to Zay Flowers shortly. They drafted him last night, not to mention some fella named Mark Andrews at the tight end position. Suddenly, this has gone from a shaky-looking skill group to a pretty formidable one if they stay healthy and develop as expected. So I'm really excited for him. If he has a good passing season on top of what he does with his legs, this could be one of Lamar Jackson's best fantasy seasons.
Plus a healthy running back in J.K. Dobbins. Gus Edwards should be healthy as well. Both those guys coming off of major knee injuries last year, Daniel, and an offensive line that was beat up for a lot of last year as well. Things seem to be shaping up to the point that I'm wondering, as we introduce our top tier of quarterbacks, how much credence would you give to the idea that when we're talking about Josh Allen and Jalen Hurts and Patrick Mahomes, that we also need to include Lamar Jackson in that conversation?
I think now you got to consider it quite a bit more with the skill position players that they have added throughout the offseason, right? And everything about Lamar Jackson is him being able to stay healthy, stay in the field, because he does so much with his legs. If he can add a little bit this year with all of those skill position guys that we just added, it's going to be a totally different world, I feel like. The one thing I will say, this has nothing to do with fantasy field, but after looking at the contracts of both Jalen Hurts and Lamar Jackson, are the Kansas City Chiefs just like the master of the quarterback contract, locking up Patrick Mahomes to a 10-year deal?
Here's the lesson learned. I'm actually glad you asked that. And in some ways, it's not pertinent to fantasy football, but it's the offseason. We can talk about this. The lesson that I think teams around the NFL should be learning from this offseason is that when you have a quarterback who is eligible for an extension in the same offseason in which there are several others also eligible for an extension, be the first.
Start the run.
Be the first mover. Because what's going to happen is this. Jalen Hurts is at $51 million per year. Lamar's at $52 million per year. By the end of this offseason, Jalen Hurts will probably have gone from highest paid quarterback ever to fifth highest paid quarterback ever. And I get it. $51 million is still a ton of money for Philly to pay any player, even one that's deserving of it, like Jalen Hurts. But if they had waited and didn't get that deal done until the end of training camp, it might be a $55 million per year extension for Jalen Hurts, just because Joe Burrow got one done and Justin Herbert got one done, and perhaps somebody else also gets another extension. So that's the lesson learned here, is do a deal as soon as possible with your quarterback, because we have also learned that even if that quarterback contract doesn't work out, they could be traded. Jared Goff got traded, and he's been really good for the Lions, obviously. Carson Wentz got traded twice. You can find your way out of
Aaron
a bad Rogers quarterback
has
contract.
A huge cap hit.
Yes, Aaron Rodgers. Yes, Aaron Rodgers was traded. So you can find a way to move a quarterback contract. Lamar, last thing I'll say about Lamar is, and this is like vibes, I don't know, should be a criteria that we talk about a lot with fantasy value, but last year, Baltimore Ravens and Lamar were at odds. It was a weird season in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
The tenor has changed dramatically. This is not a team that's going to be walking on eggshells every single day throughout the facility wondering, is Lamar going to be here next year? Lamar doesn't have to worry about his future anymore. Lamar is going to be as motivated as ever to be the player that we saw earlier on in his career. So I think there are reasons to believe that that bounce back is heading its way in Baltimore, especially when you factor in all the pieces around Lamar Jackson.
Isn't it funny, though, you say vibes were poor, and he was QB5.
I know.
Again, yeah, like, he was still QB5. And, like, again, I'm with you. I agree 100%. It was a bad situation. He was still a top-five fantasy quarterback when he was on the field. So, by the way, one other note there, coordinator change, too. We're going to have a new play caller.
Yes, we will.
Todd Monken in for Greg Roman. So that could move to maybe a more passing in this offense, too. There's really a lot to like about what Baltimore is doing for this offense right now.
But the only thing I'll say about the QB5 finish for Lamar last year was the first three games of the year came out all guns a-blazing. Mm-hmm. He was number one quarterback in the NFL. For fantasy purposes, he had that six-touchdown mm-hmm. game. Or no, Tua had the six-touchdown game against Baltimore. But same game, he was equally tremendous mm-hmm. from a fantasy perspective. So it's a little bit askew, but still, he was awesome relative to most every other quarterback last year, and he was terrible by the own standard set by Lamar Jackson. Let's move to some of the players that were picked last night, and let's just do it in order of which they went off the board, not in order of which they will have fantasy relevance this year. It feels a bit more clean to do that way, mm-hmm. a bit cleaner to do it that way. So let's start with number one, Bryce Young for the Panthers. Mike, is there fantasy value for Bryce Young going to Carolina? We talked about this a bit prior to the draft because we knew it was coming. Do you see any value here for the former Alabama superstar?
I don't think so. The rule here with rookie quarterbacks is generally you have to add a lot of value with your legs to find your way anywhere close to the QB1 conversation. That has been a trend now for quite a long time. Just look at the top fantasy rookie quarterbacks in the last decade. All of them had, 20-plus rushing yards per game, had 4-plus touchdowns every season. That is what the rule seems to be with these rookie quarterbacks. So, no, I have Bryce Young in my early rankings at 25th. I do expect him to start week one, so unless you're in a super flex league, I don't think you're worried about Bryce Young.
Yeah, pros here that he has an offensive line that returns all five starters, but not exactly an overwhelming group of pass catchers around him, Daniel.
No.
And
what is 33-year-old Adam Thielen.
DJ Chark, who, by the way, is coming off of surgery this offseason, so we'll see when he's Terrace available Marshall. To start getting reps in with Bryce Young. And a good athlete, but not the kind of guy that we expect to rush for a bunch of yards, as Mike just mentioned. Let's go to C.J. Stroud at number two, Daniel. Does he have any value for the Houston Texans? And by the way, good job, Houston Texans.
Dude.
Just take the quarterback number two overall. I'm glad that sort of logic and common sense prevailed there with a lot of smoke during the pre-draft process suggesting wasn't going to be a quarterback at number two. It ended up being a quarterback at number two.
I love Houston, and I'll talk about the quarterback, but getting both, trading back up to get Will Anderson at three as well with all the draft capital they had. They needed to re-jumpstart that franchise. C.J. Stroud, no. He's a QB3 for me in a two-quarterback super flex league. There's so many things to worry about with this Houston Texans becoming fantasy relevant again. C.J. Stroud, while he is the thing about him coming out of college, he's a really accurate passer, has great touch on the ball. But at Ohio State, he played with Chris Olave, mm-hmm. with Garrett Wilson, mm-hmm. with Jackson Smith and Jigba, and Marvin Harrison Jr. Now he's going to have 30-year-old Robert Woods and Nico Collins and Dalton Schultz. It's a big difference between the guys that he had in college and who he's going to have here for the Houston Texans. I think it's going to be a tough road for fantasy relevance for C.J. Stroud here in year one.
He does have some rushing ability. We didn't see a ton of it at Ohio State until that last game against Georgia, 34 rushing yards on 12 attempts for C.J. Stroud. But I agree with everything you said right there, Daniel. I think it's going to be a long season offensively for Houston, but that does not change my opinion that I'm extremely glad they just took a quarterback because they needed somebody to be the centerpiece of their franchise in a desperate way.
Yeah, that speculation never made sense. We talked about that on the pod the last couple of weeks. Just never understood why they would not take a quarterback. You can't go into a season with Davis Mills and Case Keenum, and now they don't have to.
Now
common sense does prevail. I'm with you.
Here's where it gets fun. Anthony Richardson goes number four overall to the Indianapolis Colts out of Florida. 13 career starts to his name. Everybody knows that. Everybody knows he completed just 52.9% of his passes in college. Everybody knows he is supposedly going to take some time to get refined. But we're not talking about being a finished product. We're talking about being a fantasy-relevant quarterback. I have done a very, very early run of projections. Mike does those. I don't do projections. I can't even build an Excel spreadsheet.
Just to be fair.
The nerd does those. Yeah.
I have done a very early run of refreshing my ranks, and the only quarterback to crack my top 20 from the rookies is Anthony Richardson.
Okay.
He is quarterback 18, and I think there's a case to be made that you can move him up a little bit or move him back a little bit. And I think, again, this comes down to the 18th quarterback off the board is not expected to be a starter, right? So if you want to take a lottery ticket swing on a quarterback and you think that Anthony Richardson's upside surpasses the likes of Jared Goff, who was just ahead of him in my ranking.
Geno Smith,
I get it,
guys like that, in that range. Yeah.
But if you're looking for your backup quarterback because you're going for the floor play, then I think there are clearly superior options, guys who are not athletes like Jared Goff at all, but that's what makes Anthony Richardson so tantalizing is that I hate to make comparisons to players, for players to like future Hall of Famers before they've even taken a snap in the NFL, but it's kind of the nature of the draft business. And athletically, this is the most athletic quarterback that we have seen at this size since Cam Newton.
Yeah.
Lamar obviously is a top tier athlete, but he is
different build.
This guy is 244 pounds, ran a 4.46 at the combine. I'm going to look up right now. What was Jalen Hurts' combine? I want to see what his combine numbers were, just for some perspective.
That's
here.
A great
because
question.
Jalen, obviously, an excellent athlete as well. But just to give some perspective on what kind of athlete we are talking about, like, this is different. So Jalen Hurts ran a 4.59. 4.46 versus 4.59. By the way, Jalen was 222 pounds. So Anthony Richardson's 22 pounds heavier.
Wow.
And ran 0.13 seconds faster, which makes a big difference in the 40.
You said 6'4", 240 basically is what he is?
6'4", 244, and ran a 4.46 40. That is
ridiculous.
That is completely ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So we are talking about a 1%, top 1% athlete in the NFL. The minute he puts on his jersey, Mike, I have legit concerns about the passing offense.
Oh, yeah.
It's an okay group of players around him, but nothing special. Michael Pittman being the most impressive player on this roster for Anthony Richardson to throw the football to.
Mm-hmm.
But we have a formula in place. Michael Pittman and that group of pass catchers is no worse than what Justin Fields worked with last year, and Justin Fields lit the world on fire for fantasy football. I am not forecasting a Justin Fields breakout for Anthony Richardson right away, but if you're looking for upside, clearly one rookie has it, and this is the one.
Yeah, and he can be a below-average passer and still be a QB1 in fantasy because we've seen that before, right? We've seen it from guys like Cam Newton, to your point. RG3 was like the QB1 as a rookie for quite a while, doing a lot of damage with his legs, and Richardson has that in his arsenal. The question I have, though, is the talk all draft season has been, this guy's raw, he needs to sit and wait. Is there a month there where he's not on the field to open the season? You're not going to want to really carry him on your fantasy roster if that's the situation. So I want to monitor his progress throughout the summer. I will say this. I don't think it's going to be long. I don't think Gardner Minshew's keeping him on the sideline very long, and first-round quarterbacks are generally on the field within the first month or so. I actually think the skill guys around him could be decent. Like, there's potential there. We know Michael Pittman's solid. Alec Pierce is going into his second season. Yep. He could be a good player. Jelani Woods looks like he could be a breakout player this season.
Everyone you just mentioned is 6'3" or bigger, by the way. Yeah. They have some. He's got huge targets.
Yeah, so I'm with you. I think Richardson has a shot to be the most fantasy-relevant quarterback because of what he does with his legs. I'm curious what this means for Jonathan Taylor. What I keep thinking about with Richardson is what happens when they get inside the 5-yard line? Is this going to turn into the Eagles offense where it's Richardson piling into the end zone? Is he going to steal touchdowns from Jonathan Taylor? He actually moved down a little bit in the projections after this move, despite me adjusting this offense to run heavier, which is, of course, what we expect with Richardson under center. So a lot of implications here. I think the passing volume will be down. But overall, it should be good for the offense once Richardson gets his footing.
Yeah, great call. Great point there, Mike, is that it's not a guarantee he starts out of the gates. But of all the teams that seem to be in the mix for Anthony Richardson, this to me felt like one of the best, if not the best, in terms of clearing a pathway to him playing right away. Like, if he goes to Seattle or Detroit, the only way he's playing this year is if Jared Goff or Geno Smith gets hurt, or those two teams massively underwhelm, and they're, 6-10 or whatever, 6-8 late in the season. Mm-hmm. No chance of making the playoffs, and you get, four spot starts or three spot starts for Anthony Richardson. So a good landing spot, in my estimation, for Richardson.
Agreed.
And I want to be clear, like, the floor is low here, right? Like, it's possible that he is just a total work in progress as a thrower, and if the Colts are a little bit protective of him as a runner, and they say, he's 21 years old, we don't want this kid taking 250 hits a year for every season of his career. He might run a little bit, but not a ton. That exists. if you're drafting a quarterback at quarterback 18 or 19 overall, the floor for the other guys or the ceiling for the other guys in that same range, not nearly that of Anthony Richardson. You mentioned Jonathan Taylor and what does it mean for him? And it's not like you feel totally different about him, right? You still have him locked in as a top six or seven running back.
Correct.
This is where tiebreakers get interesting, Mike, mm-hmm. because Bijan Robinson has found himself the perfect home, in my opinion, for fantasy mm-hmm. football. Is there any... How high would be too high for someone to take Bijan Robinson for you to kind of go, really?
And there's no
there
too high.
There is no limit, right?
There is no too high. Yeah. I actually thought, like, going into the draft, I had him, let's see, I had him sixth, right? So I had the big, I had Eckler and McCaffrey, and then there's Barkley, Henry, Jonathan Taylor, and then there's Josh Jacobs. So I had him in, actually, I had him seventh, right after Jacobs. I have him third now. Yeah. He's all the way up to three, and if you took him first, so essentially it's Justin Jefferson, Cooper Kupp, Jamar Chase, and then the top running backs. That's wide open. You can go any direction you want. And by the way, if you're picking in the top five or six and you want Bijan Robinson, that's where you have to take him. He will not make it back to the end of the second round. In fact, I don't think he makes it to the 1-2 turn. He's going to be a popular name, and he should be. He came out even higher than I expected in the projections because this Atlanta offense is going to run a ton. It is one of the run heaviest offense in the NFL last season.
Yep.
We had fantasy relevant production from Cordell Patterson for a while, then Tyler Algier.
Good offensive line, too. Is run blocking.
Yes, the offensive line is substantially better. He can handle somewhere in the range of 60% of the carries in this offense and have 300 carries, not to mention that we know he's a good pass catcher as well. So I'm curious to see how things shake out behind him, like if Cordell Patterson ends up on the roster or not. I don't have him projected for a big offensive role right now, but there is room for Robinson to push for 350 touches. Without question, in my top five. And if you want to take him first, you want to cube RB1, go for it.
And I think he will, Daniel, go higher than even where the consensus ranks end up for mm-hmm. a couple of reasons. First of all, people like new things. Right?
Shiny new
people
toys.
People like the shiny new toys, as Mike was referencing earlier. But also, if you were to go piece by piece of those top running backs that Mike is laying out, there are going to be people that are going to be out of the Jonathan Taylor business this year mm-hmm. for one season. They're mm-hmm. going to say, I'm taking a hiatus from Jonathan Taylor after what happened last year. There are going to be people that are saying, you know what, Derrick Henry is awesome, but at some point the wheels have to fall off.
Right.
Right? Let me avoid Derrick Henry falling off and get Bijan Robinson at his peak value here. Whatever he is ranked at, I think he's going to go higher than whatever his consensus rank is.
Yeah, like Mike said, if you want him, you're going to have to go up and grab him in front of a bunch of those guys. Understanding what this offense looked like last year with Tyler Algier under center, and this is nothing against Tyler Algier, but he was a fantasy usable running back towards the second half of the mm-hmm. season. So think about what this is going to look like with Bijan Robinson. Also, don't forget that 2 years ago, they used the number four overall pick on blocking tight end Kyle Pitts.
They did.
Obviously going to open up a ton of lanes. Yes. Take on some linebackers there, maybe a Jack Campbell or something in the, you know, that second level.
Yeah.
I do wonder what's going to happen. I mean, how is this? I just want to know, how is this going to affect both Drake London and Kyle Pitts from a passing game perspective? Because now they're all in on what was last year, being able to keep this running game going. That's what this team built their team around.
It does embolden them to be as dedicated to the run as they were last mm-hmm. year. So I am, you know, would it have been cool if, for those who have Kyle Pitts or Drake London in fantasy in Dynasty, if they had taken like an offensive tackle or maybe even a quarterback, yeah, that would have been pretty cool. I do think, though, relative to the price that both Drake London and Kyle Pitts are going to go at, they're still fine values, right?
Yeah,
because it's like tight end 6 or 7 for Kyle Pitts, Drake London, wide receiver 30, 32, mm-hmm. 33, somewhere in that range. Like, they can meet expectations.
Yeah, there. I'm with you. I mean, last year, one tight end had a larger target share than Kyle Pitts. Yeah. That was Mark Andrews, right? When they did throw the ball, it went to Kyle Pitts 27% of the time. That is a huge target share. I don't think that changes much this season. They just don't. I mean, Mac Hollins is their number two receiver right now, so those two guys will be busy. By the way, I do want to address something, though, that you brought up, which was going to be my next point, which is how, you know, the pushback we're going to get on Bijan is going to be the same throughout the offseason, which is how can you take a guy that early that has never played it down in the NFL when there's kind of certified, solid players in that range, right?
Do you have a two-word response to that?
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
Two guys drove to work. Neither guy wore a seatbelt. One guy got a ticket. One guy didn't. The same two guys drove home. One guy wore a seatbelt. One guy didn't. One guy made it home. The guy not wearing his seatbelt didn't. Don't risk it. Click it or ticket. Paid for by NHTSA.
I have a couple words. I have more than words.
Oh, okay.
More than words.
Okay.
More than words. Yeah.
Which version is coming after us now, Mike? Come on.
Wait, under six seconds. I'm good, right? I just wanted to address that with first of all, we could pick apart running backs like you just were. I mean, you were picking apart. So you can do that for all those top guys. There, a lot of them are getting older. Derrick Henry, even Austin Eckler, 27. But how about this? Running backs picked in the top 10 since 2012, where they finished in their rookie season. Saquon Barkley, RB2. Trent Richardson, RB9. Leonard Fournette, RB8. Zeke, RB2. Christian McCaffrey was in a committee. He was RB15. Todd Gurley was RB5. And that doesn't even include Doug Martin and Najee Harris, Josh Jacobs, guys who were picked later in the first round. I mean, that's like all the first round running backs almost. And they were RB1s right out of the gate. So if you take him.
Even Trent Richardson.
If you take him as the first running back, the first pick, 1.1, and he finishes RB6 or 7, that's fine, right? Like, you got a great season out of him and it's going to pay off. So I don't like the pushback that he hasn't played it down in the NFL. We've seen this before, and it doesn't matter. You take a running back that early to make him a feature back, that's what's going to happen in Atlanta.
The two-word response I was thinking of was Saquon Barkley. Because I think people, and I get it, I would guess most people listening to our show are A, in tune with what takes place in the NFL draft, and B, like, probably tangentially aware of what's taking place in college football. This is the best running back prospect since Saquon Barkley. Mm-hmm. And he might be superior to Saquon as a prospect coming out of Penn State. Bijan Robinson is an absolute freak runner. And what's scary about him is that if you assigned him to be a wide receiver and that was all he did for Atlanta, he could be their number two wide receiver and be very capable and very good at it. The talent is so special and unique that the bust rate just seems so, so, so low for a guy who's, 21 years old? Mm-hmm. And if ever there was a time, we were having the conversation before the show about drafting a running back in the first round, if ever there was a time to be completely the opposite of mindful of a player's workload, it's his rookie season.
Yep.
It's what the Steelers did with Najee. You mentioned him 2 years ago.
All those guys I listed. Yeah. Same thing. They all had massive workloads right out of the gate.
Yeah, but specific to Najee, not only did he have that massive rushing usage, he led all running backs in catches 2 years ago. Last year, it dropped off dramatically when they were a bit more judicious. But, like, you don't use the 8th overall pick, as Mike just said, for an accessory. Mm-hmm. And I know what the retort would be, well, hey, they've used the 4th and the 9th pick in the past 2 years for accessories. It's different at running back because it requires so little creativity and effort to get him the football. So, take a number 1 overall, not going to bat an eyelash.
What about the 12th overall pick? Do you take that as an accessory field?
Do we do this? Should I do my Lions take before or after?
I want to do it. I want to hear it before.
All right. So just quickly, for those who missed last night, Jahmyr Gibbs, running back, goes number 12 to the Lions after they had traded down from pick 6. So they picked up some extra draft capital. Then they took at number 18, Jack Campbell, a linebacker not related to Dan Campbell. He played at Iowa, won the Butkus Award. That's given to the best linebacker in college football, first ever in Iowa history. But we spent the past year applauding how the Lions have built this culture and this identity that has played a legitimate impact role in their ascension, right? They go 9-8 last year. We all love it. Maybe it's because we saw it on Hard Knocks, but we have all bought in to the Dan Campbell identity. We know what a Detroit Lion football player looks like.
Mm-hmm.
I get it. First-round running backs, first-round off-ball linebackers. There's an asset allocation conversation. But I got to be honest with you. I'm okay with the Lions taking two players who are the epitome of what they are looking for on offense and defense. Now, a little bit of maybe a hot take there, but like, I had less of an issue with it than the masses did last night. Mike is a much more.
I'm a Howie Roseman.
Yes,
and I don't. No way. He would never do that.
Analytically, I don't think he's about it.
Howie has never taken a linebacker or a running back in the first round. I don't think ever. I think they've never done that.
The organization is at like some 26 years or something straight, right? So I just want to say, like, I hear it out. I also, and maybe this is like the soft side of me coming out.
Aw.
But these players have worked their whole life to get drafted in the NFL.
Heck yeah.
And it bothers me that sometimes the reaction these kids mm-hmm. have to live through right after they achieve their dream is,
are you freaking kidding me?
That team took that player? Mm-hmm. Jack Campbell? Are you kidding me? The dude was the best linebacker in college football last year. Like, yeah, he's a good football player. So maybe I'm getting soft, but I had less of an issue with it. But that's just from a real draft conversation.
Yeah.
Let's talk fantasy. Because as far as fantasy is concerned, and let's you start, Daniel, I would be fired up if I could draft myself a Jahmyr Gibbs this year in fantasy football.
I'm fired up. I'm a little less fired up because of the other guys we have in that rotation
For now.
And that's the thing that we got to figure out, right? We obviously brought the Detroit Lions brought in David.
Okay, I appreciate that.
Right? Yeah, of course.
We brought in David Montgomery, obviously, on a 3-year deal. So really excited about him. Jahmyr Gibbs. I think a part of this is because of that Jameson Williams suspension. They want to be able to find another playmaker to be able to use in this offense. And you look at what DeAndre Swift, what they hoped to get out of him last year, and it felt like that never fully materialized. Mike, I know you've talked about it a bunch. When he's healthy and he's on the field, DeAndre Swift is one of the most explosive running backs in fantasy mm-hmm. football. But he has not been able to stay on the field, and heading into the final year of his rookie contract, again, Field, we're taping this at 11:30 on Friday, right?
Yep.
I would not be shocked. The Detroit Lions do not have a third or fourth round pick. They've got 3/5 and 2/6. I would not be shocked if they tried to find a way to move DeAndre Swift in order to move back up into the draft here in the second and third round.
Not a bad idea right there, Mike. Let's talk about Jahmyr Gibbs. Mm-hmm. Quick expository, scouting report here. Jahmyr Gibbs played his first two seasons of college ball at Georgia Tech, was a major recruit for them, and absolutely crushed it.
You know who else played at Georgia Tech was a former Detroit Lion?
Calvin Johnson.
Megatron.
But, I mean, just an awesome, awesome player there. Goes in the transfer portal last year with this mm-hmm. huge transfer, goes to Alabama, and what does he do? Continues to crush it, has some Alvin Kamara to him, Mike. Excellent, excellent receiver. I talked about how good of a receiver Bijan Robinson is. The best receiving back in this draft is Jahmyr Gibbs.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure he's a battering ram as a runner, but the Lions already have one of those in David Montgomery.
Yeah, I think that'll be the 1-2 punch. I think that's what we expect, right?
Yep.
I think on this show the last few weeks we've been talking about the draft, I had like 3 takes, right? One was the Seahawks and the Lions not taking quarterbacks in the first round. I didn't think that was going to happen. The next one was, I forget already.
Wow.
What was it?
It was good one.
Oh, it was. I wasn't buying the Texans not taking a QB at 2.
Yep. Right.
That was the other one. And the third one was last week, DeAndre Swift and Jahmyr Gibbs would not be on the same roster in 2023.
Because we went through that exercise. Right.
Yeah, we did. So I'm with you. I think Swift gets traded for now. I still have him in the projections. And I still have Gibbs and Montgomery inside my top 30. So they can really go into the top 20, at least one of them.
Which one Swift do you have first?
I have Gibbs 26, Monty 27 for now. But
funny, I did the same thing. I had him back to back. I just flipped Jahmyr Gibbs into the DeAndre Swift spot.
Yeah, I think that's fair. It's just I'm projecting it right now, and for now Swift is there, so I'm giving him some sort of role. But once he's out of there, I mean, there's a lot to like. I mean, as far as landing spots go, assuming Swift is not there, this is an outstanding fit for Gibbs. And you know, he's fast, 4.36 wheels. He's undersized, so he might not be their primary goal linebacker or anything like that. But that didn't stop Swift from having 7+ touchdowns in every season of his career so far. And to your point, he's going to be very involved in the passing game. And remember, 501 fantasy points scored by Lions running backs last season. That was most in the NFL. If it's those two guys, Montgomery and Gibbs, sharing a similar workload in this offense, both of them can be on the RB2, if not the flex radar. So really a lot to like.
You know, I'm going to see if I can do this on the fly. I'm going to figure out the running back last season that had at least 50 receptions and how far he fell. So 50 and above, Rashad White. Okay, so I guess you could fall like fairly far, but if you look at all the running backs that had at least 50 catches last year, other than Rashad White, like all of them finished inside the top 20-ish mm-hmm. or so for total scores, right? And you could parse that out, points per game as well. But like if you have 3 catches a game, which feels like a very reasonable expectation mm-hmm. for Jahmyr Gibbs based off the skill set and the offense, there's a legit shot to a top 20 play for him this upcoming season. I'm in on the fit, and I think there's a chance that if we do a show again if we did a show tomorrow at noon, we'd have a new home for DeAndre Swift. Maybe by Sunday at noon. But
last night,
the writing's on the wall. I mean, do you have the quote from Brad Holmes?
Yeah, last night he said, he was asked about, Brad Holmes was asked about what they're going to do with Jahmyr Gibbs, obviously, and they have DeAndre Swift on the roster. He said, well, I mean, DeAndre is still on our roster. He's still part of our team, and he's still under contract with us. Those are the first three things that we noted when talking about DeAndre Swift. Yeah, that's so. Not fantastic. So it didn't really change a whole lot. We just kind of put Jameer in his own separate box and just got really excited about the player. I mean, it just seems so obvious that they have started that transition of moving on to whatever the next guy is. And we had 501 points, fantasy points, on the ground, and neither of those two running backs are going to be with this team next year. Mm-hmm. In theory, assuming that DeAndre Swift gets moved. So I'm really excited to see what this offense is going to look like with Jameer Gibbs as one of these guys, Mike, because I didn't get a lot of goal line work. He wasn't like a heavy touchdown guy from that perspective, but he is a home run hitter. Saw a little bit of Jamal Charles, too. I know we talked about Alvin Kamara. A little bit of Jamal Charles in his game, I think.
He is super. I mean, he is explosive as all get out in the open field. Like, he is going to make defenders miss left and right. You did talk about Jameson Williams earlier. I'm sure they knew about Jameson Williams before the suspension was announced last Friday.
Sure.
But for six games, their fastest player on offense is not going to be Jameson Williams. It's going to be Jahmyr Gibbs, at least out of the gates next season. I kept DeAndre Swift, for those asking, at like 43 in my running back ranks. I had to move him far enough down that I'm like, I'm not justifying like a high draft pick on him, but I think DeAndre Swift is going to find a home, and in the right spot, he could be super value. You are going to try to continue to manifest DeAndre Swift to the Chiefs. I'm still working to manifest a Deontay Johnson touchdown after last season.
That did not work out last year.
I haven't shaved since that last touchdown. I mean, you can't tell, but I have not
shaved.
That's
incredible. Yeah. I see like a couple
a
of
little
hairs
bit
there.
Of shadow.
I have a hair, yeah.
I think when we did like an early offseason pod, we were like, come up with a trade that you'd like to see. And mine was like a fourth round pick and Willie Gay to the Lions for DeAndre Swift. And
I'm now, still in on that.
You already addressed a linebacker, so they checked that box.
I think it's like a fifth or a sixth round pick for DeAndre.
Yeah, I think so now. Maybe I think at this point, plus everyone kind of knows that he's expendable at this point. By the way, one quick thing on Jack Campbell, the Lions taking a linebacker. If you watched Hard Knocks last season, you know you're not surprised at all that they're in the linebacker market. I mean, that was one of the key like unheralded storylines, is them just ripping into those linebackers the entire show.
He is a Lion. Like, we talk about that, I think, more at the college football level, because I feel like stigma of what a player is or like aura takes place much more frequently. But he is a Lion. He is a Lion through and through.
And it is really evident, and I'll stop after this, but it's really evident when Brad Holmes came up and was talking about these two guys. It was obvious. He knows a lot of people thought we drafted these guys too early. He does not care. He had conviction about both of these players. And I get the mock draft process, but guys, when you feel this way about a player, you go up and you grab the guy that you want.
Once we get past like the first five picks, there's so much variance on boards around the NFL.
Oh, man.
At 12, if the Lions are fearful that Jahmyr Gibbs is not going to be there at 18 and he's the highest ranked player on their board, even if he's a running back, like, am I really going to fault the team for going by its board? They spent 12 months studying these players. Like, not every pick is going to work out. There are going to be some picks that look like abject failures, probably within 2 years. But some of these picks that people are not enthused by end up working out, sometimes quite masterfully.
Hey,
so
man,
for
Lions
now,
fans got to give Brad Holmes a little bit of slack, too.
He's
been one of the best ones.
All right, Mike, you're not a Lions fan.
I don't care about what you said.
The only thing I'll say is philosophically, I mean, last year they had, efficiency-wise, had a top-five offense, and they struggled to win games because the defense was horrendous. I don't know. Just spend it first on a running back.
48, 55.
I'm not on board with it, but that's a philosophical question. I agree with you, Field. I'm excited for Gibbs. I love him from a fantasy perspective. I'm happy for him. It's just, that's a different conversation. Team building is just a different conversation.
Mike, you're so lucky you're for the Eagles, Mike.
Yeah,
like,
right.
I can't wait till the Eagles.
So lucky.
Like,
so easy.
Dave Gettleman's been hired as a consultant. Mike is going to shudder for the next Lord knows how long and just sort of, oh, man.
Well,
no. The Eagles are the perfect team for you to root for, because Howie Roseman certainly operates in a way that is very much aligned with how you do. And by the way,
it's unbelievable.
It's an awesome way of going about their business.
Crushing it.
All right, let's talk about four wide receivers, because for the first time ever, we had four wide receivers go in succession in the first round of the at least during the common draft era. That's from 1967 and on. It starts at number 20. So we had to wait two running backs before any tight end or wide receiver. And then things started at number 20 with the Seahawks grabbing Jackson Smith and Jigba. I think probably on average he was the highest rated wide receiver in terms of people that I spoke to in the scouting community, Mike. As far as landing spots, though, I'm not so sure this is a very good one for fantasy.
Not in the short term. I like it long term a lot. The Seahawks just continue to figure things out and win games. We thought they'd fall apart last year with Russell Wilson out and Geno Smith and Drew Lock in, and they did not. In fact, Geno Smith was QB5 in fantasy points last season.
number one in completion percentage, fourth in touchdown passes. The Seahawks were near the basement of the league in three wide receiver sets last season, but that has not always been the trend there. I think we'll see a flip-flop back now with DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett on the outside and Smith and Jigba in the slot. So he's going to play a lot. You know, when they're throwing the ball, he'll be on the field. It's just going to, it's hard to see a high ceiling in terms of target share with those two guys on the outside. But again, one guy goes down, like we might rank him, what, 48th in week one, okay? Right, 46th right. in week two, and then Lockett misses a game, might be 32nd, right? Mm-hmm. So he is just a perfect late round flyer. Hopefully the hype won't get too out of control. You take a late flyer, you keep him on your bench.
A lot of mouths in that offense to feed, though, when you look at it. I mean, with DK and Tyler, and Ken Walker isn't going away. He obviously was fantastic last year. He's going to be a top 10 running back for me. Mm-hmm. When you look at this offense, Mike, are you going to have, are you going to project having a guy like this? Like you said, you know, we're waiting halfway through the season until you're really starting to use him from a fantasy perspective, because there's just not enough balls to go around in this offense unless you have Tyler or DK get hurt and miss time.
Mm-hmm. Probably. Yeah, but he's a good bench stash.
Exactly. I mean, he's a league winner. Yeah, he's a potential league winner. He's a guy in the second half of the season that can have like an Amon-Ra, St. Brown sort of second half if he gets a chance to play a larger role.
DK and Tyler Metcalf have largely held up pretty darn well. Tyler Lockett.
Tyler Lockett.
Did I say DK?
You said Tyler Metcalf.
They're brothers now. No, they're just teammates. DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett have largely held up pretty well. Mm-hmm. Tyler, I think, had like a broken finger last year he played through. So I mean, it was a shin. It was a shin issue, mm-hmm. right? Those two have largely held up pretty well, but injuries can be fluky. Who, 21.
Who ran the slot in Seattle last year?
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza, better because it has to be.
It's only a kick. A jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
So we've seen sort of a lock in the past.
There's a few people worked in
DS
there.
DS Crew just played some. They've had like Penny Hart play there in the past. Mm-hmm. Like it's been kind of a... It's kind of been a smorgasbord of
Jackson
slot receivers,
Smith and
but this
should
is
the,
their first true conventional slot receiver, probably since like Doug Baldwin, who will play there on a full-time basis. Doug played some on the outside on occasion, but he was, love me some Doug Baldwin back in the day.
Eskridge was supposed to be that guy, but just hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, injuries have really caught up to him.
Sure have.
21, Quentin Johnston, Chargers, and this is one where if this has some similarities to what we just talked about, right? You've got Mike Williams, you've got Keenan Allen, you've got Austin Eckler. This team probably profiles as much more 11 personnel heavy, Mike, compared to Seattle. That being said, I still view Quentin Johnston as comparable to Jackson Smith and Jigba. I think Jackson Smith and Jigba is a more talented player. I think Quentin Johnston has a better chance for a slightly larger role in this offense. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm with you. The reason that everyone kind of thought the Chargers might go this direction is because of injuries, right? Mike Williams is constantly beat up, occasionally misses some games, and Keenan Allen is 31 years old, missed a chunk of last season as well. But again, when those two guys are on the field, they're going to be force-fed the football. Keenan Allen was a top five fantasy receiver when he was healthy last season. Mike Williams has been top 15 in fantasy points per game the last two seasons. Now, when I adjusted here, I actually did not move Allen. I don't think his target share is really affected by this. Mike Williams, a tiny drop down for him. And Johnston obviously crushes any potential value for Josh Palmer. For a year three breakout. So Johnston will be out there in three wide sets, but I'm with you. I just don't know that there's much upside in this situation. He's going to need an injury to find himself on the flex radar.
Let me read you a couple of important numbers here. First number is, let's see if I can get it, $34,717,500. That's Keenan
That's
Allen's.
20, oh.
That's Keenan Allen's 2024 cap it, the final year of his contract.
Wow.
Meanwhile, Mike Williams, 2024 cap it, $32,460,000, also the final year of his contract.
$55 million.
A year from now, it's even more. Those two numbers combined, I think, is like $68 million bucks. those two players could be gone a year from now.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Williams is a better bet to be around long term because he's much younger, obviously, mm-hmm. than Keenan Allen. But even if one or the two of them is gone, Quentin Johnson has a very clear path to being a top flight wide receiver with Justin Herbert as his quarterback. So patience is probably the word here on Quentin Johnson. Very interesting, though, for Dynasty.
Mm-hmm.
Number 22 is Zay Flowers. What a flex by Eric DaCosta and the Ravens organization the past 3 weeks, Daniel. We think we probably all recall it was Easter evening. OBJ signs with the Ravens,
mm-hmm.
and you're kind of like, all right, that's like pretty good, right? That's like, you know, I have some doubts about OBJ and his health, but
kind of
still
a lot
OBJ,
of money.
A lot of money, but still it's OBJ,
but
right?
It's OBJ.
Like, it's OBJ. Like, yeah. He was the most desirable free agent wide receiver available. Now here we are on April 28th. They've got OBJ. Lamar Jackson's got a long-term contract, and they drafted Zay freaking Flowers in the first round.
Yeah.
Flexing right now. But is there much value in Zay Flowers?
So Zay Flowers is going to fall into a lot of the same conversation that we've been having with the rest of these wide receivers. It's going to take some time for me to figure out how is this pecking order going to sort of suss itself out, yeah. right? Mark Andrews is still going to be one of the most targeted players mm-hmm. in this offense, even though he's a tight end. They brought in OBJ and gave him a bunch of real money, and I got to assume they want to get him involved as well. Not to mention Rashad Bateman they've been waiting for. We talk yeah. about that third-year breakout with wide receivers a lot of times, so obviously, they've got to be excited about Zay Flowers, but no, he's not just like going to come in and be a wide receiver three for me in this offense. He's someone that, again, upside, maybe later on within the year as he gets a little bit more. I like him as a wide receiver four, wide receiver five down the stretch.
Yes, like I talked about earlier in the show, a lot of mouths to feed suddenly in this offense.
Yep.
An offense that is going to have a lot of Lamar Jackson scrambles, which is going to take away passing volume, which is why the receivers over the years haven't produced a lot of fantasy points, and that's generally okay for the number one, right? Like, we've seen Marquise Brown have some big seasons there, but when you have Mark Andrews, who I took a few targets away from because of this move to Zay Flowers, not to mention the other receivers, when you have Odell Beckham, and they're paying him a lot of money. He's going to be featured when he's healthy and on the field, and you still have Rashad Bateman. It might be tough for Zay Flowers to see consistent targets in this offense, even if he's number two in line. And by the way, I think the biggest the guy who loses the most value here in Baltimore is Rashad Bateman. I think Flowers might even win the two job there. That's crushing for him. He's no more than a late flyer, but I think the same for Zay Flowers. I think those two guys kind of battle for that two job. Honestly, one of the kind of underrated value boosts out of this is Travis Kelce, because hurts Mark Andrews, who's the consensus tight end too, and it just separates Kelce even further from all these other tight ends like Andrews and Waller.
Yeah.
And who
TJ
else
Hockenson.
And TJ Hockenson, of course.
So, I mean, you're looking right at me. You can come on.
I wanted you to say it just to, yeah, like the Lions get rid of him and then he's a featured target.
Superstar right.
fantasy tight end. That's how it works.
You touched on this earlier, Mike, but it's a new offensive coordinator. That will be interesting to monitor how this offense looks compared to how it looked with Greg Roman. Couple of caveats here. People say, you know, Todd Monken wants to push the ball down the field. That's what he did during his time as an NFL coordinator, to a degree during his time as the Georgia offensive coordinator. It's very possible that he wants to be pass heavier, and they still are like a bottom 10 team in terms of passing volume.
Sure.
We talked about this earlier in the offseason, but you go back to the 2019 season. That was Lamar's breakout year. 440 passing attempts for Baltimore. Lowest in the NFL. That was 244 fewer than the Falcons. The Falcons were throwing the football like 15 times more per game. By the way, the Falcons
That's
just throw
crazy.
The ball a ton. Isn't
a
that
whole
wild?
Bunch, right?
The next season, Lamar also, obviously, still very much in the mix there as a high-level starter. 406 passing attempts. The Steelers were at 656, so 250 more passing attempts. So, again, even if the Ravens come up by, like, 25%, they're not even going to be league average just because of the way the NFL is playing right now. But I am still optimistic this will be a pass-happier attack relative to where it's been in the past. But the first three wide receivers kind of fall into a similar category for me. Like, if things break really right for them, they're totally gifted enough to make a real impact and be fantasy relevant. Circumstantially, though, hard to use much of a priority pick on them.
It kind of feels like those first three wide receivers were a lot of what happened to last year's wide receiver class, where we liked a lot of those names, but they didn't fall in super favorable landing spots for fantasy.
This is actually, and I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, and this is probably a dumb thing to do, but this has been drawing shades of the 2020 receiver class to me, because if you go back to 2020, I don't even want to sound like a turd when I say this. I'm trying to pat myself on the back, right? Because even if I had like a fairly optimistic outlook for Justin Jefferson. I only like undershot him by about, I don't know, like 1,000 yards. But I remember in 2020, we had the conversation on the show of like, which rookie receiver, whose role do you like? And this was after the Vikings had just traded Stephon Diggs. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, you just go through some of them in 2020 rookies receivers. I think Justin Jefferson has a chance to be like a close to a fixture for Minnesota because of the fact that there is no Stephon Diggs now. And it's just Adam Thielen amongst those star receivers in Minnesota. It took a month for Justin Jefferson to really get a role. But once he did, he exploded. And I feel like Jordan Addison,
yes,
now teammates with Justin Jefferson, Mike, has the clearest path of these four receivers, despite the fact that he was the final one taken, to a real role. And if I were drafting right now, he would be clearly the number one out of those four that I'm drafting.
Yeah, I think it's a close call of him and Smith and Jigba, very close. But I'm with you. I mean, remember, 2 years ago when he was at Pitt, you know, transferred to USC last season. Yep. He won the Biletnikoff Award. He was the best receiver in the nation. Think about all the receivers we were just talking about that have been superstars at the college level in 2021. Addison was the best in the business. He is undersized. He did throw up a red flag at the combine. He was slow for his size, one of the worst speed scores. That's generally a red flag for wide receivers. A lot of those guys don't pan out, so that's a little bit of a concern. But he was a machine at the college level, 29 touchdowns in 35 games. Should slide right in there as their primary slot receiver. He'll carry the ball a little bit. He'll be used a little bit as a returner as well. And I will say this, the difference, I guess, I mean, look, when Jefferson got there and dominated, Adam Thielen was on the other side. Thielen was still productive in fantasy. And so Addison certainly is a shot to be as well in a Vikings offense that over the last three seasons is fifth in touchdowns. They score a ton of touchdowns. So there's an opportunity for Addison to be productive right out of the gate. I'm with you. KJ Osborne is the receiver he's competing with for that number two job. So, I'm buying in on Addison. I think he certainly has a chance to be a flex option.
And talking about these four wide receivers, I've got Jordan Addison as the first rookie wide receiver off the board. And then I go Jackson Smith and Jigba, then Quentin Johnston, then Zay Flowers. Do you guys have any
No major problems. I have a kind of tiered. I have Smith and Jigba and Addison together, and then I have the other two just a few spots further down.
I think that seems fair.
When you look at this, I'm just curious, and this is a little bit different from the redraft perspective, but is there one of these guys from a dynasty perspective that you like more? I know we're talking a lot redraft, right? With Quentin Johnston, I look at the idea of, man, you got Justin Herbert as your quarterback and both of those two wide receivers that we talked about and Keenan Allen was getting older and Mike Williams potentially. I mean, is there one that you like more in dynasty than redraft or is it pretty much the same setup?
I tend to break the tie with like talent, right? Because so much can change from 1 year to the next. And I did think Jackson Smith and Jigba was the best player out of these four.
All of them.
So I think he probably hangs on by a thread as my top dynasty wideout of these four, Mike. But if Addison, who's, by the way, it's not like the gap between Jackson Smith and Jigba and Jordan Addison is substantial. He's a really good player as well. If he plays with a capable quarterback for the next three seasons as the starter right out of the gates, we might look at that pick as like the one that really hit amongst these wide receivers.
Yeah, I think Smith and Jigba, we've kind of learned the NFL views him as the top talent there. So I probably lean that way. But Quentin Johnston is right there. To your point, he could be the number one receiver for the Justin Herbert-led Chargers next season. I mean, there really is a lot of intrigue there for a guy that's now set up with Herbert for the next really five seasons, assuming he's the real deal.
They all, I think, are in a very, very similar tier for dynasty purposes. I think these guys it's reflected in the fact that they want 1, 2, 3, 4 in succession, right? So this group, it's funny, you know, you see the NFL clearly view Jackson Smith and Jigba as the top. It's like by one spot though, right? Like by only one pick. So
I think over the past month or so, it became clear that he was number one on most big boards. But
I think part of the reason why the run took place is just happened to be the perfect confluence of guys who are comparably graded with a bunch of teams that needed wide receivers.
Yep.
Hence some of the action that we saw, or the trades that we almost saw to kind of jockey for those receivers in that range.
I'm with you. That was a predictable run. In fact, I tweeted, could we see a receiver run here and listed the four teams coming up? And I thought maybe two would take four in a row. All four of them took a receiver.
Good instincts, so you're right.
That's why you're good at projections, Mike.
No, that was lucky.
Let's wrap it up with the final skill player in the first round. Dalton Kincaid, University of Utah tight end, goes to the Buffalo Bills, number 25 overall. The Bills actually moved up, I think, to get ahead of the Dallas Cowboys, who were long rumored to be interested in the tight end class. And they take Dalton Kincaid, freaky athlete, guy who was unbelievable for Utah this past season, Daniel.
Yeah.
The only thing that, I don't want to, sound disappointed, because, again, I was saying earlier, I want these players to be celebrated on their big night. But from a fantasy perspective, anytime you have two tight ends that are good on a team, it gives me the heebie-jeebies.
Well, and now we've got two Buffalo Bill tight ends, DK1 and DK2 is the way that I'm going to refer to them as.
Okay, yeah.
And I don't really know what, like, what's, how do you look at the fantasy outlook for what Dalton Kincaid is going to be? They already, the Bills do not throw a ton to the tight end position as it is. We wanted to see more out of Dawson Knox last year. We didn't really get a whole bunch. We've seen flashes from him, right? We've watched him be able, especially, I think those flashes are more because of he's in a Josh Allen-led offense than it is about Dawson Knox himself. But I don't, there's nothing about this from a fantasy perspective that really moves the needle for me because it's just, it's not a situation. You're the tight end too on a good team, but it's not going to do a whole lot for me.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's a very pass-heavy, high-scoring offense. You're right that they haven't thrown to the tight end. I think they'll set a new, we'll say, Sean McDermott record for tight end target share.
Yeah.
They're going to use more 12 personnel because they're not very good at receiver after Gabriel Davis and Stephon Diggs, right? It's like Khalil Shakir right now. They brought in Deonte Hardy. It's guys like that compete. I think Trent Sherfield's there now. They're competing for that three job. They could still address that, so we'll see. But here's the thing. Rookie, even first round tight ends are not fantasy relevant. In fact, a good stat here from Kyle, only twice over the past decade has a rookie tight end averaged 10 fantasy points per game.
Ooh,
while
can
appearing
I guess
at
that
least
is?
10 games. Yeah, do you,
I think that was Evan Engram with the Giants.
Yeah, now and the interesting thing with him, he was a first round pick. He was basically their wide receiver one at times.
Right.
They were really in trouble at wide receiver, and they were desperate, and that's why he was featured. He had not actually had a really good fantasy season since then, until past season
last
was Jacksonville.
Year. Yeah.
And the other one is, of course,
the other one is TJ Hawkinson.
Kyle Pitts. Who, again, was drafted in the top 10 and was a feature target right off the bat, over 1,000 yards. Kincaid is not in that situation.
Not, yeah.
Dawson Knox is going to play a role. He'll be their primary, you know, maybe, you know, do some blocking. He's going to be on the field quite a bit. He'll play a lot of snaps. Look, his value got crushed here. Dawson Knox is no longer like a good tight end, too. Right. He's going to see less volume. But is that enough that Kincaid is going to see a 15% target share and be a tight end one? No, not this season. It's just there's a learning curve with the tight end position. 2024, probably the breakout year for
Kincaid. Let's avoid both of them here this year, basically. Absolutely.
This is a signal, though. Like, it's a signal of one of two things. Either the Bills fundamentally believe that a two tight end offense can be a method for success going forward, or they feel as though Dalton Kincaid is tight end in label, but wide receiver in practical usage, right?
Ooh,
because
Mike Gesicki.
Like, this isn't like if you know people thought that the Patriots, as an example, could draft a tight end in the first round. Well, both Mike Gesicki and Hunter Henry are going to be free agents after this year.
Yeah.
So if you take one, it's like, all right, well, this is like I get it, right? Like, you know, it's the succession plan. Dawson Knox, unless they change their mind dramatically, is going nowhere, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they just signed him to a big contract last preseason. So this to me feels like the Bills acknowledging that, like, maybe the two tight end set can be the backbone of their offense going forward. And in a year in which the Bills had extremely limited resources to spend, they said, you know what? The best pass catcher that we can add right now is not a wide receiver in free agency. It's not a wide receiver at pick number 25. Instead, it's a tight end who he ain't getting paid to block. I'm telling you right now. Dalton Kincaid is not Michael Mayer. He is not Darnell Washington from Georgia. This guy is obviously extremely talented. He'll make his money, though, because he might have 1,000 yards in a season one day. That's how talented he is.
I'm with you. But, you know, I feel like every year there's like a tight end or two or like they're never going to block. They're basically a wide receiver. They're going to line up a wide receiver. And they're not fantasy relevant in year one except for Kyle Pitts. And he is the extreme. He's like the best tight end prospect in the history of the NFL. And to get him to tight end six, I mean, he couldn't even find the end zone that year, right? He had to use a huge target share and 1,000 receiving yards to get there. So I think it's a long shot that Kincaid is going to be a guy we're talking about as a startable option this year. Down the road, though, landing spot, fantastic. With Josh Allen in 2024 and beyond, this could be terrific.
Yeah, I was just going to say that even if he is used like a wide receiver in their offense, it doesn't matter for our game, right? He's still a tight end. You know, like,
correct.
It has to be an extremely, extremely rare situation where a guy plays so many snaps at wide receiver and no snaps at tight end for us to adjust the position that he actually plays.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask you a question, Field?
I think
we're basically done with the list of first round fantasy relevant people that we have. Yep. Obviously, you did the first draft podcast all season long. And we talked about watching kids' dreams come true last night. Obviously, it was a tough night for Will Levis, and Mel Kiper Jr. feels really strongly about Will. Do you have a spot where you think he might fall here in the second round?
You know, given that everybody bypassed him in the first round, I don't. The team that I have my eyes on is the Rams, because the Rams have, obviously, they are in a transition period. Matthew Stafford's not going to play forever. He already had to quash the idea of retirement earlier this offseason. The Counterpoint to that, though, is this team needs to get – they did a lot. Yeah. They had to plug a lot of holes. We talked about this before. 44 players on their roster right now. 44. There are 90 allowable spots. The average besides the Rams is like 65. They're going to have literally every undrafted free agent on their roster in the next 72 hours. Yeah. So
quarterback isn't the area that they need to plug with
some,
those.
You can make the case both ways. If they were to do that, I think it would reveal a lot about where the Rams feel like they are at as a franchise.
Yep.
I should also note that the new and also the old Kentucky offensive coordinator, Liam Cohn, spent a year this past year with the Rams. So if they want a scouting report on Will Levis, Cohn was there in 2021 when Levis was excellent. Then he went to the Rams this past year. Levis was not very good. They're going to have intel to gather via Liam Cohn.
You know what? I think that might not make sense, though, because there's a good chance the Rams pick top five, maybe with the first overall pick next season, if you look at that roster. I have them projected for that first pick at this point based on what the roster looks like.
That's crazy. Insane.
So, but and you know, again, we do this every year. Next year's quarterback class looks so good. But there's potential superstars at the top of that draft, a quarterback next year. And presumably, if they're picking in the top two, they would take one of those. And if you have Will Levis there, that's awkward, right? Like, what do you get? You know, if you're going to use Matthew Stafford all this year and then just turn it over to Levis and pass on one of those stars, probably not. So I think it makes sense to address a need position, specifically on defense, and then worry about quarterback next year. It's like one of the only good positions on the roster, right, quarterback.
So we've had this conversation. I'm sure we've all had it amongst friends. And, like, my general rule is that, like, no matter what it was that you did to get the ring, it was worth getting the ring.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This might be the most extreme case where, like, reasonable minds could debate it, right? Because you follow up your Super Bowl season with quite literally the worst record for a Super Bowl winner the following year ever. And Mike tells me that it might be worse going forward. Like, that's crazy.
It's like the rain out.
Oof. It's like the opposite of the worst to first. It's going from first to worst to worster, basically, the second year. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah. Do the Lions own their pick next year as well?
No, we do not. I wish we did. I wish we did.
I mean, I think it's the worst defense on paper that I've ever seen at this point in
and
the
that
process.
Has Aaron Donald.
And it has Aaron Donald, which is unbelievable. So, yeah, we'll see what they do. I don't think it's a quarterback draft for them. They just have too many needs, but we'll see what they do.
All right. Well, good stuff there. I'm excited. This was actually a beefier first round with fantasy relevant players than we've had in some previous years. This is good stuff. We're going to do this again at some point next week. I don't know specifically what time or day, so make sure you check your podcast feed, but a lot of good players still left over. Will Levis at the quarterback spot. There's always depth at running back that can make an impact. And there's some good wide receivers as well.
Tight ends.
Good tight end class. And if there are kickers to break down, Mike Clay will have them in projections. We will pick
his
brain.
You get punters, I'll do kickers?
Yes, I got punters.
We had one kicker last year, right?
I think we had one kicker
last year. Was it Cody Parkey?
Cody York.
No. Cody York.
That's right.
What year is this?
I was going to say.
It is Jake Moody season tomorrow, Saturday. Jake Moody from Michigan, who is just outstanding, as I'm sure everybody who listened to this podcast was hoping to get kicker analysis. There you have it! All right, Mike and Daniel, the very best. We'll talk to you guys again next week. Be sure to download, subscribe. We'll have some video content sometime soon. For these two, I'll talk to you. I'm Field. We'll talk to you guys at some point next week.
It's no secret, not a mystery. The one that we depend on for all our podcast needs. Graduate, Full Sail, you. A Lions fan through and through, with the hippest beard, I'm telling you.